Welcome back, and thanks for joining us for part two of our conversation with Perry Chandler. Let's get back into it. Are anti-racist relationships in your family different than anti-racist relationships you cultivate outside the homes, for example, with colleagues or friends? Or,
I mean, I think they can't be for me, partly because I do this work, right? Like, because it is hard to turn it off, you know, like you're always, it's always inserted, you know, into something. Like, it's funny because I make a joke, and this is another way in which I uphold white supremacy, about when I use my white voice on the phone, right? And it's obviously, you know, I know what it is. My friends know what it, you know, why we do it. And still, I shouldn't be fucking doing it. It shouldn't, you know, because we have all these inside like terminologies and things like that. I think that one of the things in doing this work and living this life is that I need even more consistency throughout all of my relationships. And because it's hard, there are days when I don't, when I walk into a space or when I exist in a space, I just want to be Perry. I don't want to be Black woman holding all the things, holding the tension, knowing that I need to stand up or speak out or be this or be that or acknowledge other people's expectations. Or there are times when I just want to be me all at the same time and have full acceptance with that. And I think that in all of my relationships, all of my friendships, part of that acceptance is we have these conversations, we can check each other, we can get down deep and dirty, and it's all love. And acknowledging, I mean, we have it's very weird, like the way that friends in a group chat will send a meme, you know, and it's like a white woman, and I'll be in a group chat with like two other white women, right? And there'll be like, you know, something from Twitter, and it's a, you know, white woman who named her child, you know, Malibu Barbie, you know, something, something. And then I'll respond to them and be like, oh, you all need to gather your people. That's so ghetto. You know, like we get to have these conversations about stereotypes for each of our groups, and they gather themselves and they acknowledge, you know, their stuff and their whiteness. And to be able to have some level of levity with regard to our intersecting identities, I think is really important. In having these relationships, and they're not just anti-racist relationships. We're naming all of the biases. We're naming, you know, all of that existence together. You know, and I get to challenge them, and they get to challenge me. Especially those of us with kids. I'm always like, okay, but you're raising a, you know, cisgender white male over there. What does that mean? And they get to explore concepts with me, and you know, it's That's what feels like community to me, the consistency of not having to work so hard. It comes naturally. I think that's what it is.
Would you say more about that? What comes naturally?
Being able to shed the fear of, oh, you're going to misinterpret this because I'm a insert,
right,
you know, identity here. You know, just being able to name it in a general conversation and explore it, you mm-hmm. know, in the moment with people that you trust you and want nothing but for all of us to be whole, I think.
Yeah, like you've developed a trust that you will maintain, you will be in relationship through the struggle.
Yes.
And that, you know, like that's part of the relationship is what I'm hearing.
Yes, yes.
As you were talking, a question came to me. I'm curious, do you ever not challenge? Do you ever find yourself, whether in your relationship with your husband or with your friends or anybody, colleagues, do you ever not challenge?
That's a great question. I wish that I could say, yes, there are times when I don't, because it's fucking exhausting. But I have found that if I don't challenge, it just sits and stews, and that makes it worse. And so for me, it's healthier for me to at least name it. Maybe we don't explore it in that moment, but I get to say, this is making me uncomfortable, or I have a question about this, or this made me think this. We don't have to talk about it, but like, what's up, you know? And I think that it also takes the toxicity out of it. There are days though, when I wish I wouldn't challenge, when I just like, girl, just let that shit go. Just let it go. That's not who I am. That does not live in my spirit. And my spirit is never called to let things go.
You know, what's interesting is that I sometimes let things go, right? Because I know that if we're going to be in relationship, I'm going to come find you.
Right.
Okay. Like, I'm going to find, like, there's going to be a moment where I get to circle back.
Right.
You know, like, you know how you do it in a workshop and you're just like, I'm not going to do this tit for tat for this person in workshop.
Right. I'm a parking lot.
But I know that it going forward, like, I'm going to be able to address it or speak into it, or educate into it without putting it directly on the person's lap.
Right.
Because I'm going to allow them to save face. But right. What I'm not going to do is allow misinformation.
Yes.
To promulgate.
Right.
So like,
maybe the word isn't challenge. Maybe it's, you know, it's, I don't know, not even circumvent, but like, it's not about a confrontation. Cause when I hear challenge, sometimes it might feel negative. Right. But like, but to your point, it's, I'm not going to personalize it, but we are going to have a conversation about this at some, you know, at some point, for maybe not your specific knowledge, but for the relationship's health, for the greater good of the world, you know, type situation.
Yeah.
So I get that.
I think that the beauty of being in relationship is that it's not timed and it doesn't have to be tied up in a neat bow by the end of our time together in this moment. Cause there'll be other times where you can unpack it further or address it or approach it from another angle and continue to be in relationship while you sort it out.
Right. No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it also depends on like what is the level of closeness, right? Like if it's with Wall Boy, we handling it immediately. Like we getting into it. Cause I'm not holding shit. Like I, you know, like this is it. This is happening. But if it's with a friend or in a good friend, you know, it can happen in the moment or it can, you know, figure itself out eventually. Yeah.
Eva, you were saying it doesn't have to be tied in a bow. I'm like, I start hyperventilating a little bit. I'm like, can we please wrap it in a bow?
Everybody doesn't like bows, Jason. Everybody doesn't like bows.
No. Jason's like, I've taken copious notes. I'm going to review it. I want to make sure that I get it so that I can show up perfect next time.
That's white supremacy. That's white supremacy. That's exactly what that is.
Eva, that's hysterical because Eva and I went to see the Slave Play before pre-pandemic when it first came to Broadway. And we debriefed after. And there was a character in there that had a notepad, a white woman. And she was the note taker. She's like, I'm going to get it right. And Eva said to me at dinner, like, yeah, you're that white woman. I was like, no, what? No. Oh, shit.
I am.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
Well, I mean, here, let's just call it for what it is, though. You do need a note taker in the group, right?
Facts. This is true.
So I benefit from that. It's the note taker and the additional assumption as though what the outcome is going to be neat and tidy and fit into the particular part of the graph, right? Like you could put it into it.
And everybody's going to feel good.
It's going to be neat and tidy. So, yeah. But like, I think writing things down is fine. Just
now, now that I have this, I'll know how to every time.
There's going to be one of our listeners who color codes their notes are going to feel attacked right now. I am not attacking you. I'm just saying that not all conversations
around I'm a Virgo.
Can be neat and tidy.
Listen, like, I am a Virgo through and through. I have a deep appreciation for for a color coding and an organizing of thoughts. I'm okay though with there being mess at the end, as long as I know that there was some level of constructive conversation, expression, like in the middle, right? Not even gonna lie, I totally have a pen and paper next to I always got a pen in my hand. I'm always ready to take a note, but that's sometimes just to soothe my OCD itch, right? Like, but understanding that at the end, it's okay for things to be messy and it's okay for the journey to continue.
Yeah. And I what I appreciate is that you two are like taking care of your needs by addressing it, right? Like in the moment, right? Especially that a need that might feel more pressing in your most intimate relationship, right? Which is right. With your partner. And to others, like there's another energy, there's a different energy to that. Yeah, are there other ways that you feel like you care for yourself in racially stressful relationship moments?
That's something I definitely have to work on. I think because when there are racially stressful moments, keeping it 100 as I always do, I get pissed off at Wallboy because he's white, right? Like there are times when I know that you can't fully understand. It's not that you're not supportive and not that we aren't intentional around defining what support means for me in those moments, because support doesn't always look, smell, sound, feel the same, you know, for different situations. And, you know, obviously I don't fault him for being white, but sometimes it is difficult to be in a relationship with him when my Blackness is under attack.
Yeah.
And all the feelings that's incorporated into that, because he doesn't shield me. Contrary to popular belief, for people that are in interracial, intercultural relationships, that proximity to whiteness doesn't protect me from shit, right? Mm-hmm. Like I literally have a tattoo on my middle finger that says still Black, because my Blackness has been questioned because I'm in this relationship with this white person. Which I think is fucking ludicrous, because if anything, my Blackness is there's a huge spotlight put on it, right? But I will say that one of the things, as we were, you know, for the past couple years going through, you know, all of like the Black Lives Matter protests and all of the trauma, being re-traumatized as a country, and having to confront or reconfront or try to acknowledge all of the racism and hatred that still exists. One of the things that I loved after I pulled myself out of the floor of my closet from crying was being able to like text my Black women friends and be like, hey girl, you know, just like simple shit. Like, even during the pandemic, having like sister girl moments on my back porch, you know, that were just for us to cry together, to be around each other, 6 feet or not, but that energy is always powerful and strong and palpable. And so knowing that I have those connections with people that feed my spirit in a way, that it seems so simple, but like just being able to have that small little connection of you get it, you see it, you're in pain, but let's help each other carry it. Let's help each other. Let's talk through it. And that's even with, you know, like Black women friends that are married to white men. We still get to have our sister girl moments. Like we exist even stronger in those moments. Because it's a language that our partners don't speak. It's a language that our kids don't speak. It's a, you know, it's our own thing. And it definitely feels like a blanket, a weighted one.
I appreciate that, because I don't think people realize, how affinity group
yes.
work, or being an affinity can mitigate racial stress.
Mm-hmm.
Not just by like the intimacy element of it, which I think is an important piece of it, right? Like a genuine caring, but in the having a shared experience that doesn't have to be defended, or like there's a collective knowing.
Yes. Yeah. And acknowledging that we're not a monolith, right? Like, absolutely. But there is shared trauma, shared experience, shared passion, shared heart, shared mm-hmm. culture that exists. And being fortunate to be able to participate in that level of community and heart and understanding, you know, that is a privilege in and of itself, and should be encouraged in all environments.
Do you think you would have the same relationship with your husband without that?
No, not at all. Because I need to get out of it. Some, you know, I need to, there's something about like being with my people, mm-hmm. you know, there's something about like things that hit me differently than they'll ever hit him
yeah.
for various reasons, but specifically around racial stuff. There's just things that he'll never understand. And he gets that, as he should. He's grown. He's experienced life enough, you know, that yeah. also everything ain't for you. we have that conversation, right? Like, it's like, no, that's not for you. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. You can watch it. You can see it. You and I can have conversations, but it's not for you.
Are we ready for the two questions, Eva?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
So we asked everyone that we talked to, we asked these two last questions. And so the first one is just curious whether in this relationship that you've been describing in your family, and you talked even a little bit about your son, so even that, wondering if there are any early mistakes or shortcomings that you experienced or can remember in your development of your relationship.
Yeah, I think that I think that I was too quick to excuse his parents' behavior. And his parents' treatment of me. And I think that I let Wallboy off the hook too, for not protecting me, for not seeing it, for not acknowledging it. And that was a mistake. That was a mistake. We rebounded from it, thank goodness. But that also, you know, it's hard because you're in this relationship, you love this person, and you know that if you churn things up a little too much, that it's going to have a negative effect on them, right? But then for me to not value myself enough and go, yeah, but you deserve some love and some protection and some acknowledgement and some, you know, I remember with my son when he was born, and he was in arms, I had taken him over to, we had taken him over to Wallboy's parents' house. We're outside on the back porch with his mom, and his dad was kind of like over off on a corner. And his mom comes up to me, and I'm holding Chandler in my arms, and she says, "Why does he look so Asian?" And I said, "I'm sorry." And she's like, "Yeah, why does he look so Asian? He looks really Asian. I'm really confused. Why does he look so Asian?" And she kept saying it. Like, she kept saying it numerous times. And I'm just like, "What the fuck? What the fuck? What the fuck?" You know, like, what do you do in these moments? I'm also like really very much aware I'm holding a child. I'm aware of my blackness. Like, I'm like, also, are there witnesses? Like, I'm also looking for, is anyone else hearing this? Is seeing this? Like, you know, is this really happening? And I made a joke. And I said, "Well, I told your son he was in the top three potential baby daddies." And I did that to give myself time and space to try to disarm her. And, you know, Eva, you mentioned earlier, like when I was giggling about, you know, some of the like really traumatic shit that has happened and has been really painful. That was one of those moments where I did the same thing. And that was me being a smart ass, but also like, I need to protect myself in this moment instead of calling her like, you racist ass bitch, how dare you? And then also, are you trying to slut shame me too? Like, what are we doing? Like, are you, you're like simultaneously being racist and also asking me like, if your son is the father to my child, right? Like, so you're hitting all the notes all at once. And I was by myself. Like, no one said anything. Eventually, after I made my comments, Wahboy's dad came over and was like, you know, kind of said to his mom, like, that's enough, that's enough. But I was left alone. And, you know, and I still to this day, obviously remember that moment. I don't know if I made the right decision in that moment or to say what I said, and if I should have gone off on her or pushed it aside or, you know, whatever, but like, I was fucked up. I was fucked up. And I was not protected. You know, I think that if you were to ask Wahboy with situations that had happened, he's definitely been very, very accountable for when he should have, now, you know, hindsight's 2020, right? Like, but we're both young and, you know, going through the things and, you know, not really knowing how to really navigate. I didn't really know anybody in interracial relationships, like as adults growing up, you know? So like having those conversations was very new to what that means as a family unit, as like adults in a relationship. And how you talk about it. And it's also why you hear a lot about people being in interracial relationships, intercultural relationships, where they don't name things. They don't have these conversations. They don't explore the discomfort. They don't explore, you know, their own biases against each other, you know, and family shit. They push things aside. That's pain. But I value myself more now, and I value him more. Yeah. And wanting to protect my kid too. That's the other thing. Like, you know, once the kid comes, like I don't want him being exposed to any level of toxicity, and I want him to be able to stand in his truth. Cause I know it's going to be really difficult for him as he learns more about himself and explores more about himself. Hmm. I just want to be a soft place for him to land. Yeah. And right. Tell him where I messed up.
Right.
Yeah. Well, the last question, do you want to ask it, Eva? Do you want me to ask?
Sure, I can ask the question. Okay. Perry, if liberation and justice had a sound, what would that sound be?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it was the sound that I actually just made, which was a wind blowing, which was a forceful wind blowing. And in my head, that forceful winds. I don't know if you all have seen The Wiz. It's one of my favorite movies. I actually like labored while that movie was on. So at the very end, when they're singing Brand New Day, after Eveline has been killed and, you know, flushed down the toilet, there's this wind that blows, and they, all the workers get to take off the ugly suits that they're wearing, and a wind blows and all this like red dust, you know, from working in the factory blows away, and the floors are clean, and you see these beautiful black bodies coming out from underneath these ugly, like intentional jigaboo looking suits, right? And you see just this glistening black skin and sculpted bodies, and it's a wind blowing that blows away all the remnants, all the legacies of trauma and violence and hatred and blood and tears and separation in order to create space for that brand new day. That's what came to mind.
You're going to make me start singing.
Listen, that at our wedding, that was one of the, I lip synced that song at my wedding.
Love it.
It's one of my favorites. Brand New Day, The Wiz. That's, it brings tears. I'm just thinking about it. It brings tears to my eyes. It's one of my absolute favorite songs. Yeah. And just the whole visual of that. Yeah.
I have tears in my eyes too. So
yeah,
it's visual. You gave me more than a sound. You gave us full visual. visual treatment, the storyboard, the direction. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Remake coming.
Yes.
So where can people find you? Because I know you're doing this new project with Erin, who you talked about, like social media, like where?
Yeah, so actconsultinggroup.com. I don't know, these days I'm all over the place. Like, you know, we have the gubernatorial campaign happening in Atlanta right now. So we're trying to get Stacey Abrams elected to be the first Black female governor, which is really, really exciting. So that's coming up in what, 48 days, you know, tomorrow. Wow. So you can find me phone banking, text banking, trying to fundraise. I'm, you know, on boards, two boards for some really amazing organizations. Vox Teen Communications is a teen-led organization, uncensored place for teens at Metro Atlanta teens to express themselves. So happy to support their work in whatever way possible. You know, I'm all over the place. Like, you can't nail me down.
Can our listeners, like, are you on social media at all? Can people follow you anywhere?
Yes, I'm a weird, yes. So I'm on Instagram, like Twitter I just use for lurking. Right? Like just the Harry Styles fangirling and stuff like that. But I am on Instagram and it's Mama P _ nuts NUTZ. And I have peanuts on all of my things. Like peanuts is like my brand. It's a nickname that I got. And so now I'm peanuts everywhere. It's on my Yetis. It's on my necklaces. I'm peanuts. Mama peanuts. I'm a mess.
I don't think I'm following you. I'm about to though.
Yes. It's fun. It's fun. It's everything from like, you know, down with the patriarchy and fuck racist, abolish white supremacy to like, oh my God, look at my kid. He's so funny.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And they're kind of related.
They are, absolutely.
Thank you so much for your candor and your spirit and your willingness and ability to share this story, your family with us.
No, absolutely. Thank you all. Thank you all for building this, for engaging in these level of conversations and wanting to expose the public to the things that they do and don't know and encouraging them to you know, explore conversations that are real and create opportunities for people to exist in their truth. I mean, storytelling, that's what all this is. This is what this is. I think that like for all of us who've been doing this work for so long, one of the things we realize is that all people really want to do at the end of the day is have an opportunity to tell their story without judgment, with full acceptance and, you know, with integrity. And you all create that opportunity. So thank you for doing it.
Pleasure.
Absolutely.
Well, I am blown away by Perry.
I know, there's so much there.
There's a lot there. Like in some ways, she was a mirror to some things that I've experienced in my own my own cross-racial relationships. Well, with my husband, even though we're two people of color, but he's Black and I'm not. And at the same time, she was a mirror and she was a window in these kind of Black white. Her experiences with judgment and people questioning her identity is not something. It's just hard to hear, and so important to like just name because that's painful. And I've never experienced that pain because of a relationship that I'm in. And the other thing that kind of like came forward for me was how these intimate relationships and the pain, the potential pain when it's not working, you know, like with her in-laws, for example, like that is hard. And I know people don't make those decisions easily. So, and I just cannot yeah, like I need to think more about it. I want to think more about it, but they are such tender spots to hit when you hit them.
Do you mean like really recognizing the truth of?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause she's trying to cultivate a relationship. She's trying to create spaces for her legacy, her child, right? This is not just about her, right? So she's protecting her children.
Right.
And it's different, right? Because if you're in the workspace, for example, you don't relate to them in any other space. They don't have the ability to hurt your child, you know, but one of her primary functions as a parent is to protect her child and to create safe space and healthy upbringing, healthy racial identity. That's a piece of it. And if your own family can't support that, wow, that's a tender, tough spot to be in.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I found really interesting that highlighted for me my own thinking, like how it's still stuck in some white supremacy stuff, was when I asked the question about any mistake, early mistakes or shortcomings, and her response was, how I heard it was, I didn't essentially stand up for myself. Like I gave too much leeway. I gave too much of myself. That's how I heard it. Mm-hmm. That was like, no, that's not what I meant by that question. Cause what would have been a mistake in my mind is challenging. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm so used to hearing that people didn't keep things polite as the mistake.
Mm.
That people didn't center comfort as the mistake. So she flipped it. And I caught my mind going, wait, that did she understand the question? And then I listened and I was like, of course that was the mistake. But that really struck me. Of my own, like how I had to do mental gymnastics to even understand what she was saying.
Wow.
Even though I understand the words because I understand English, but like in the context of the question, I was like, oh.
You know, some people prioritize this belief that you're making yourself, that you're being safe and trade intimacy.
What do you mean?
I mean, if something is present for you and you can't address it authentically, how can you really have intimacy? Avoid conflict, right? You can have the safety of having a relationship. There's plenty of folks who are in cross-racial dynamics in their intimate relationships, like a girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, or spouse, and they say with intention that they don't talk about race.
Yeah.
And it's like, to me, I always wonder about like the potentiality for intimacy to grow if you can't have those relationships. I'm trying not to be judgmental about it, but like for me, they see that scenario seems unhealthy from an intimacy perspective, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
If I'm wrong, I'd really love to hear from our audience about like how, if they're doing that, like how then do they engender true intimacy?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, so go on our Facebook page, respond. We want to know. Yeah. Anything else?
I guess I'm just sitting in such sincere appreciation for her, her willingness to talk about her family.
Yeah. Without even like, without hesitation.
Yeah. Generous.
Very. Yeah. Thank you, Perry. Well, thanks everyone for listening. And yeah, there are more conversations coming. And hope you tune in. Any last piece of wisdom, Emma?
I got no piece of wisdom, but I'm looking forward to our next conversation. See you soon. 'Cause there was you, you held my hand.